This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delco.
And I'm Brendan Nell. It's episode 3, and Liam, it's a big week. We've had shock, horror, total consternation. Everybody upset about 20 minutes of rugby that basically cost the Springboks a game.
Yeah, it was one of those where you watch the first 20 minutes and there was a lot of frustration, and understandably so. I mean, obviously, if you follow social media, people were in the moment and they were a little bit aghast by what unfolded. But then again, I mean, the deeper you went into that game, the more you sort of came to terms with what was happening, and also certainly afterwards. And I think the Box can walk away from that loss having learned not just new things, but things that they kind of knew already that will maybe need, not maybe, it will need some intervention the closer we get to World Cup.
So no reason to panic then, no reason to drop everybody and get everybody else in and or even withdraw from the World Cup.
No, certainly not. I mean, if we just isolate certain things, I don't even want to talk about the things that unfolded in the game. If you just look at selection, if you just isolate that for a moment, the fact that again we had this large number of Japan-based players who came back, and it was essentially their sort of first game in a while. Nine in the 23, would fall into that category. It was then obviously quite clear in the Bok performance that dropped off. There's no question about that. And the last time we saw that, same number of players, almost the same, well, just about the same players as well. Last year, first game of the end of year tour, they played Ireland. And again, it just felt that the Box were a little bit undercooked in that game. They were a lot better the following week against France, and of course they got better as that tour progressed. Just if you isolate these things, that's just selection. There are obviously other things we can talk about a little bit later on. But that certainly is a thing where you going forward, you would want to be careful not to repeat those mistakes, which is unlikely now going further. The closer we get to World Cup, and also obviously in World Cup, those are things you want to avoid.
Well, I mean, I suppose that there's a lot of people probably questioning why those players, why we didn't take a battle-hardened team to New Zealand. And I think a lot of people were so buoyed by the win over Australia that they thought we're going to probably walk in and do the same in New Zealand. And I know we spoke about it last week. It's a hell of a difficult place to win. Auckland is a tough place. And let's be honest, those first 20 minutes, everything went right for the All Blacks. They played at such a pace. The Box couldn't catch flies, never mind the ball in the air. And they ended up just probably their worst 20 minutes of rugby under this current coaching team since 2018. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I suppose, if you want to look for positives, the one good thing is that they could have taken 50. There's a lot of teams that sort of have that start against the All Blacks that end up getting demolished.
Yeah, although not, if you look at the quality in that Bok team, you look at the scoreboard and you get a bit concerned, and then you look at the quality and also what was going to come from the bench, and you're like, no, it won't balloon too much. But I take your point. I mean, you don't play properly, and given the first 20 minutes of the All Blacks had, because they were certainly up for it, I think what must have played a big part the way they started the game was the fact that they haven't beaten the Box in New Zealand since 2017. I think that certainly was a factor they took into that game.
And I suppose we don't actually know how much Evans, the loss of his dad and the emotion around that and all the emotion around that and the rust. And you put all those together and it maybe have been a bit of a perfect storm for that 20 minutes. But, yeah, they recovered extremely well. The second half when Dwayne and Peter Steph and them came on, really, really looked different. Malcolm came on, and I suppose there's another point that a lot of people have been making to me is, why doesn't Malcolm Marx start? I think the first thing I want to say about that is just that we're in a situation, there's four games to the World Cup now. The Box have got to see try different things out. And Malcolm makes a hell of an impact from the bench, but there is a growing argument for him to start.
And it's an argument you can't dismiss. I do see the value of him playing a big part in the second half, especially his ability to turn over ball at ruck. If you have a guy like Malcolm on the field, if he operates in concert with a guy like, say, Dwayne Vermeulen, You may have another guy like a specialist, certainly, like Marco van Staden, who may also be on the field in the closing stages of a tight and tense quarterfinal at the World Cup or semifinal. I would prefer those guys to be on the field then and not necessarily in the first 15, 20 minutes. Because if you do a like-for-like comparison with the guys who are likely to be in that 23, I'd prefer them to be there at the death.
Yeah, I think another thing that we should actually mention as well, would it have really made a difference? Because, I mean, if you look at the way the breakdown was reffed, we had a classic French ref situation where, to be very honest, and I know people that say, you know, we're going to complain about the ref by bringing this up, but I think any fan on both sides would say the breakdown was a mess. There was no consistency either way. Mm. And that sort of, you know, eventually I think the box probably were a bit slow to react to that. The All Blacks were a lot better. No player sort of rolled away and got out of the way. And yeah, just it became a bit of a free-for-all there. And I think maybe the one concern for the box is that just that they didn't react quick enough to that.
Mm. Yeah, you would expect guys with that experience to have reacted to that sooner. We've been in that boat before. You know, if you look at previous World Cup exits, for instance, there's that famously the quarterfinal in 2011, I suppose, is the best example. But there again, yeah, although I suppose in that instance it was what you actually do.
Don't mention the war. That's one of those don't mention the war situations. We don't want to talk about Bryce Lawrence now.
Mention the name.
I think for this calls for a drink though, and it's about time we open the wine. We've got a screw top here again, and today it does have a rugby theme. We're going to be drinking a Ken Forrester 2018 Renegade. Of course, Ken Forrester is a very, very well known wine. And what you might not know is that Ken Forrester's on the board of the Sharks.
Oh, that's good. Thankfully, it's not a Ken Borland Renegade because we had him on the show last week, and yeah, you know the mess he created. But yeah, this looks a fantastic bottle. I don't think I've had this before, but I'm familiar with Ken Forrester wines.
Yes.
So here goes.
Cheers. Well, I think the one thing that sort of we all know, and everybody in the Southern Hemisphere sort of knows, but maybe people in the Northern Hemisphere become a little bit I suppose blasé about is that, you know, writing the All Blacks off. And I think the one thing this game showed, and we would always know that, is that the All Blacks are definitely going to be affected at the World Cup. With Joe Schmidt there, they've righted a lot of the wrongs that we saw in Nelspruit last year. And they exceptionally have a good pack now that can stand up. It's not that they've ever had a bad pack. But
yeah.
But yeah, you can't write the All Blacks off ahead of the World Cup.
Certainly, in the prop department, I think they've certainly upped their game. And kudos to them last year. I mean, to turn it around from the Mbombela loss to a good win at Ellis Park for them last year, they did exceptionally well, I thought. What we also need to point out is that's now set them on a path where they're 9 games unbeaten, which, you know, going into a World Cup. You know, that obviously, I don't think the Wallabies will roll them over. I doubt that very much. So they'll arrive at World Cup with the wind in their sails, chests out, something they often do when they arrive at World Cup. So let that be. I mean, it's.
I think maybe we probably prefer that when there's you know, more, and especially being in France, there's going to be a lot more attention on them as well, being in France's group. So that should be interesting to watch. If you look at the BOC team, obviously this is off week. They've all gone home. They probably regroup sort of towards the weekend anyway, and started training for Argentina. Argentina did pretty well. But before we get into Argentina, just to ask you, if you were the BOC coach, What changes would you make for Argentina?
I think the All Blacks game had thrown a few things up. I mean, we mentioned the Malcolm Marx situation a little bit earlier. I wouldn't look at the Argentina game at Ellis Park in isolation. In other words, I'd look at it as that game and then the one in Buenos Aires. So if you think like an international coach of a top-tier country, you would, after defeat, you would want to right the ship immediately. And sort of get the public support. Not saying the public support has vanished. All I'm saying is to get people sort of focused on a winning brand again. Go out with what you deem to be close to your best possible 23, 15 and then 23. And then for the game in Buenos Aires, which is not a rugby championship game, that's just a warm-up game for World Cup, you can maybe tweak a little bit in that game. That's the way I would look at it. In terms of individual selections, if you look at the team that played against the All Blacks, the 23 there, I don't think there's a lot you can change. I think whoever starts at Ellis Park would have to almost come almost exclusively from the 23.
Well, I actually have a different viewpoint. Knowing that what Jock said on Saturday after the game, that they've almost had the entire squad given a run, there are still a couple of players who haven't had a run. I'm talking about Jaden Hendrickson should be back with the squad. Herschel Yankees hasn't had a run. Jean-Luc Dupria hasn't had a run. So I see some of them probably getting a run again. I think we might see Jean Klein come back into it as well, depending on what the outlook is. If they want to start maintaining momentum and moving forward now, or is this still an experiment? I suppose that's the big thing.
Yeah, and also I know they obviously announced their team quite early in the week. If the All Blacks sealed the deal against the Wallabies early in the day, then what are the Boks really playing for? So it may be that they will look at it that way, where game time for players who haven't featured that much, where that becomes paramount. I would still sort of swap it around. I'll still go hard for Ellis Park, and then you can afford to almost take your foot off the gas a little bit in Buenos Aires. But one way or the other, it'll be interesting selection. And also the defeat and the way it happened against the All Blacks in Auckland does beg for a little bit of introspection, and sort of they need to interrogate the process that they followed. And whether that was something that they feel comfortable with.
Yeah. Over to Australia. I mean, Eddie was busy breaking radios in the box, giving us a lot of laughter and stuff, and also came up with this wonderful quote in his press conference about being a car mechanic, which I can't really see Eddie being a car mechanic, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember my first car was a Datsun 1200. Yeah, and you'd fix the handbrake, and the next day the windscreen wipers would break. And we're a bit like that at the moment. Last week we didn't attack, this week we did attack, but our decision-making around the ball was poor. So, this is a bit of a process we've got to go through, as painful as it is and as hard as it is, and it seems like where we want to be, the team we are today is a long way from the team we want to be tomorrow. But, we'll keep working on it and we'll get it right.
And there he sounded a warning that if I was the All Blacks, I'd watch out. And I'm not quite sure the All Blacks are going to be quaking in their boots, especially given the Bledisloe record of how many years is it now that they haven't won it? I think it's more than a decade. It's just everything's in the All Blacks' favour, and everybody will expect the All Blacks to win quite handsomely. But knowing Eddie, is going to make the week fun next week for us again.
Exactly, and I think the Wallabies will fire some shots in those games, so I won't dismiss them completely. But I mean, I still don't see the All Blacks tripping up against them.
No, not at all. And I mean, kudos to Argentina. And the one thing that's amazed me during that game, and you've got to give it credit to them, and they're fantastic, passionate people. All the Argentinians we know are really great, passionate rugby supporters. And you look at that crowd that they had there, I mean, they almost were louder than the Aussie fans in that stadium. And what a wonderful thing to see. And when they got that winning try, I mean, their celebrations were almost like they'd won the rugby championship.
Yeah. If you travel to South America, whether it's for a rugby match in Argentina or a soccer match in Argentina or a soccer match in Brazil, the things you see in the stands is just extraordinary. I think you kind of think we are passionate about our sport, but that is just another level. So hardly surprising what we saw in terms of the support they got there. If you look at their performance as well, I think they've sort of warmed to tight challenges, if I can put it that way. When there's a bit of a scrap to be had, when the game is tight, they've the last few years they've shown that they're up for it. In the last, 8 years, I think they've beaten the Box twice. They've beaten New Zealand twice. They've beaten them in Sydney. They rolled them in Christchurch last year. They've beaten the Wallabies a couple of times. In fact, I think in their last 10 games against the Wallabies have only won 5, and Argentina have now won the last 2 in a row. Yeah. So they seem to be taken seriously, and I suppose if you look at you know, what Michael Checker's objectives will be for this tournament, and then and obviously the World Cup. If you say to him, okay, you're going to take a bit of a bad loss against the All Blacks, but you'll bounce back away against the Wallabies, he probably would have taken
it. Yeah. And he's talking about another character there. We're going to probably find him at near Ellis Park, giving us something to talk about as well. He is that sort of abrasive character. Sort of like Eddie sometimes without the humor.
Yeah.
Is that a bit harsh?
No. Michael is quite abrasive, there's no question. I mean, I sort of like his sort of gentle demeanor. He's very much sort of a front foot sort of coach. He sort of just wants to sort of get the first punch in kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't mind that. He always makes things interesting. And given what we do for a living, I'd rather have that than, these press conferences going for 40 minutes and it just doesn't give you anything.
The one thing I must say, that we in our business, we get coaches who, when you start a question, and if you ever listen to press conferences, listen to those things, where you ask them a question that, and they start like way back, like 2 years ago when they started their tenure, and they take you through the whole process in about 5 minutes and then eventually get to the question that you asked. Not Checker. He's straightforward. He's the guy in the bar who wants to shout back at you. And it's good. It's good fun. I must admit. Speaking of which, the Ellis Park test we heard this morning. We just checked. It's not sold out yet. A lot of the cheaper tickets have been sold out, but there are some Class A and B tickets still available. 850 and I think 1,200 rand.
Is it class or category?
It could be category. Sorry, yeah, probably category. Class sounds a bit
classes.
Egalitarian, I think is the word I'm using. But they are available. Please do yourself a favor. And the one thing they keep on saying to everybody, which buy them at Ticket Pro, which is the official suppliers, or at the stadium office. Please don't go buy them at Viagogo. I think the thing is, there's been a lot of sort of piracy and stuff there. And your tickets may not be valid. So if you're going to go get them at Ellis Park or on Ticket Pro. And there's still a couple of, and it's going to be a great occasion. The last time the Springboks play in South Africa before the World Cup, it's worth going to watch.
Absolutely. I think Argentina will, whether it's at altitude or at the coast, they're going to give it a good old lash. So the box will be tested in that game.
This is a very nice wine, by the way.
I haven't actually tucked into it since that initial sip.
You're behind you a bit, Liam. You still like the box in the first 20 minutes.
I'll catch up, don't worry.
There's, of course, another bit of news this week as well, which I've got a lot to say about, but we probably don't have enough time in that. Was a certain Mr. Johnny Sexton, who got a three-match ban for telling Jakob Paper he's a effing disgrace. I'm not sure if we can swear. We could have probably said the whole thing that he said. And several other things, and approaching him and sort of being intimidating towards the match officials. And okay, I mean, the first thing I want to say about that is, it seems like it's a ban tailor-made to get Johnny Sexton to the World Cup. That's the first thing. Second of all, you can't be serious about combating abuse of referees and refs in rugby, and then you go and give it decisions like that. Dylan Hartley got 11 weeks for telling the ref he's an effing disgrace. Carl Sinclair got two weeks for saying, are you effing joking, to a ref, which was obviously not intended as intimidating as Sexton. And what makes it even worse is Johnny Sexton wasn't even part of the match day squad. He was in a suit, and he shouldn't have actually even been on the field at the stage it happened.
Yeah.
But they've let him get away with it. And you've got to say, what does that say about rugby's values?
Yeah, I think the disgrace in this instance is probably the ruling.
Yeah.
You bring up rugby's ethics, or whatever you want to call it, its ethos. Rugby's always prided itself in that. If you go to World Rugby, their charter, if you go to even Ireland's charter, the things that they hold dear, the pillars that sort of uphold their game, which they list as respect, integrity, inclusivity, fun, and excellence. Under integrity, they talk about, we aspire to do the right thing and endeavor not to be a bystander. Now, I will argue they are very much a bystander, sort of left the decision for other people to be made. In fact, I'll probably venture a bit of a guess here and say they, given the fact that World Rugby is based in Dublin, you could make the argument that some of these decisions may well be influenced by them.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is an EPCR decision, so it's not a World Rugby decision, but the head of the disciplinary committee is the head of World Rugby's disciplinary committee as well. It's also the same guy who gave Rossi a 9-month ban for his video, whichever side of the fence you are on that one, whether you think it's justified. It's just been quite ironic that the same people defending Sexton are the same people who crucified Rossi. And you can't really have it both ways. At the end of the day, he was extremely lucky, and it's very hard for anybody outside Dublin or outside Ireland, who obviously have a bias to have it seen play, that you sort of wonder if this is a travesty of justice and if it's tailor-made to make sure Sexton has his swan song.
Yes, I think there's little doubt that there is a level of sort of political expediency in all of this. I think there's a fair amount of hypocrisy at play, and it's not going to serve the game well in the long run.
I think the one thing we also got to realize is, there was a big thing about Ben O'Keefe getting abuse from fans and totally overboard. Wayne Barnes after the France game last year, another one, and a lot of what you do sends the message to fans. And if a player can stand, who's not even part of the game, and go tell the referee he's an effing disgrace and get away with a 3-week ban, which it's, you got to wonder, he's injured. He probably would have played a part in those 3 games. How big a part is still debatable.
Well, if you look at his playing record over the last 2 seasons, I mean, he's been used sparingly, and understandably so. The man is 38. I think he played a total of 500 and odd minutes, maybe 520 over the last year for Ireland. I think the last time he played 10 tests in a calendar year for them, when I say calendar year, season, would have been the 2019-2020 season. So they do use him sparingly. And, I don't know how much action you'd have seen anyway in these 3 internationals or warm-up games. But, yeah, he's certainly going to be a talked-about man at World Cup one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think what we'll probably see as well is you'll probably see, just like we know World Rugby works behind the scenes, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't get Jakob Paper for a game, Ireland, as the competition goes on.
Well, I think they are precluded anyway because that we are in the same, South Africa's in the same pool, so they won't get him in the pool stages. But yeah, it will be deeper into the competition. And it'll be interesting because if Jakob Paper proves himself to be the best ref at the World Cup and Ireland end up in a semi-final or final, heaven forbid, it'll be an interesting decision.
Yeah, and the other thing, talking to some of the refs, they tell me that this wasn't the first time this has happened. And it's actually the other thing that's sort of almost been a farce as well is just how long it took to get the decision. It was initially as if nobody wanted to take the decision. Then they delivered a letter to Ireland, asked them to reply, and then, to Leinster, should I say. And, it just took like an age. I mean, if decisions are going to take that long, and then you come up with this sort of thing, you sort of give impetus to the conspiracy theories out there.
Yeah, I don't want to call it conspiracy theories. I think it's people arriving at well sort of measured decisions or conclusions.
Yeah, I must admit, Mr. Sexton is a very, very lucky man. And I don't want to say, I know that we often get, say that there's a persecution complex among South African rugby fans, but you got to look at that, what Rossi did, and you got to look at some of the other decisions. You look at Dave Renew, who criticized the refs, Kieran Crowley, who had a full go at the referee after a test last year, and nothing happened to them. Yeah. You sort of wonder, is the playing field level?
Look, I mean, I'm all for trying to get the best players to play in the biggest tournament, because that is the stage on which they have to perform. But then they need to play ball. They need to hold up the end of the bargain. And rugby is a game steeped in tradition and value, and that's something that needs to be upheld.
Well, we thought it was going to be an interesting week. I don't think we ever thought it was going to be this interesting. And there's been so much. We could probably fill 3 of these episodes with everything that we could have talked about. But for now, we're going to sit back and we're going to enjoy the Ken Forrester wine. And please go and have a look. Go and subscribe to this. It'll be on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, Google Podcasts, I believe, and Amazon and Iona.fm. Have I got them all right? Oh, I do. Jeez, I did my homework. Anyway, that's enough for episode 3. Thanks for listening, and catch us again next week this time.